Monday edition, the Victory Monday edition, Mr. Relevant, presented by Door County Distillery. I'm Alex Stroff with you from the Gruber Law Offices, One Call That Cell Studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Everybody took off today. I don't know if I'm going to be that insufferable after a 38-10 win for the Packers, but I actually think I'll be pretty rational today. No Joshy DiMaggio, no Tiny Hands. They are both off today. Riley Yauch is running the show today back in the Everlight Solar Studio in downtown Madison. We'll get Riley's thoughts in a bit on the Packers' big win, which brings them to 8-3 on the season. Big win for the Packers on Sunday. Not because they won, not the way they won. Like, there's just a million reasons why that was such an important win for the Packers, despite beating a really beat-up 49ers team. You never apologize for winning in the NFL, just like you did in a week ago on a blocked field goal against the Chicago Bears, and you won't apologize for winning by 4 touchdowns this week against the San Francisco 49ers. So everything really impressive yesterday for the Packers, which we will dive deep into. I think eventually we'll talk Badgers. I don't know that I'm ready to talk Badgers yet, just given how disgusting that is. 4 losses in a row, including allowing almost 50 points to Nebraska on Saturday. So I don't know if we'll get into it today. But I'm just so unbelievably disappointed with the Wisconsin Badgers. So maybe we will dive into it at some point. But the Packers not bringing me down today as they advance to 8-3 on the season, as I mentioned, 38-10 win over the San Francisco 49ers. That is not what I expected. I'll tell you that much, right? Like, I expected kind of I thought the Packers would win. I just thought it would be a little bit dicier. San Francisco's defense, you know, holding Josh Jacobs to more of what ended up being a Christian McCaffrey day, right? Like 60 all-purpose yards. I thought maybe that could happen. Love would throw an interception or two, which he didn't. And, you know, the Packers would win by 4 or 5. I thought maybe, you know, 28-24, 27-21 type game. It was nothing like that. 38-10 for the Packers, which is absurd, right? Like, I think this is a good football team. I don't think I've said anything but that here through 11 games in the season. But I didn't know if they were this good. And look, I'm all for making, you know, acknowledging what they played. They didn't play Brock Purdy. They didn't play Trent Williams. They didn't play Nick Bosa. They didn't play Dre Greenlaw, right, who tore his Achilles in the Super Bowl. But San Francisco should still be, despite their record, viewed as the cream of the crop in the NFC. And to dismantle San Francisco and a really well-coached team by Kyle Shanahan, as well as the Packers did yesterday, is a huge feather in the cap for Matt LaFleur. Now, 3-4 in his career against Kyle Shanahan, 3-1 in the regular season, 0-3 in the postseason. But to effectively say, hey, San Francisco, we are not on the same level in terms of where we are in the NFC race. We are not on the same level. We're going to pound the ball down your throats. We're going to let Jordan Love make some plays. And truthfully, he made more plays than his receivers did, right? Christian Watson, who we'll talk about a bit later, dropping that effective dagger ahead of halftime. That was a big drop. Christian Watson's first drop of the season, by the way, despite a team that's top three in the league in drops. Christian Watson's first of the year. It was a big one, but luckily it didn't shake the momentum by any means as the Packers continued to roll in that second half. But all in all, defensively, the way Jeff Hafley's D was able to maintain and control and contain Christian McCaffrey was super impressive. Brandon Allen, albeit a backup quarterback, is still an NFL quarterback, and the Packers got to him twice. They sacked him twice. It felt like they were in the backfield quite a bit. Never really let him get going. 17-29, 199 yards, a touchdown and an interception. Defensively, I was impressed. George Kittle was really the only problem. And the 49ers, despite playing a backup quarterback and without their left tackle, have a lot of problems offensively, right? When you think about all those skill position players, they have George Kittle, they have Christian McCaffrey, they have Deebo Samuel, they have Juwan Jennings. And most of those guys, you didn't hear from. Outside of Kittle, who had 6 catches for 82 yards. Juwan Jennings had 5 catches only for 40 yards, which is an average of about 8 yards a catch. McCaffrey was fine. A total of 68 yards between rushing and receiving. And Deebo Samuel, non-existent. 1 catch, 21 yards. So defensively, the Packers were really impressive yesterday. And again, I get it was against the backup quarterback, but the way you contain some of the best skill position players in the National Football League, that's impressive. Coming off of a game against Chicago where you couldn't get off the field. So I thought that was massive improvement from the Packers defense. Offensively, Jordan Love said it after the game, but he echoes my sentiment, which is it finally feels like the explosive offense we've kind of expected all year showed up for 60 minutes. Love, first time all year he hasn't thrown an interception in a game. Two touchdowns, no interceptions. Only threw the ball 23 times. Now you're playing ahead for most of the game, and Josh Jacobs was rolling, man. I mean, he was terrific yesterday. This is the Packers offense you should expect. Minimize the mistakes, utilize the running backs, take advantage when your receivers are open. And there were a couple of moments, right? Obviously, that Christian Watson drop was a big one. Dontavian Wicks had a big catch. Romeo Doubs had a big catch. Tucker Kraft, obviously, on the touchdown run, just runs through some defenders, right? Like, that guy doesn't go down. Tucker Kraft is a fun player. Jaden Reed, again, kind of a minimal impact in this game, but you know what you have in him. He's probably your best skill position player offensively, not named Josh Jacobs. So all in all, this was a complete game. It felt like the first complimentary game and complete 60 minutes the Packers have played since the Arizona Cardinals game. So all in all, really, really impressive performance by this Packers team. And maybe nobody more impressive than the running back Josh Jacobs. As I mentioned, 26 carries, 106 yards. Not one, not two, but three touchdowns for Josh Jacobs. It's as simple as this. When you go out in the offseason and you make a splash move like the Packers did by bringing in Josh Jacobs, this is why you sign him. Yesterday is the reason you bring in a guy like Josh Jacobs. He's a big bruiser, cowbell back, who will run straight through your face mask. And he did that. First downs, big carries, three touchdowns. Packers capitalizing in the red zone, which is something they haven't done a great job of this season. Josh Jacobs was the reason the Packers won the game, yes, but also he's the reason the Packers can make a run come January. If he continues to run at the level in which he did yesterday, about 4 yards a carry, but got into the end zone three times, consistent, falls forward, doesn't fumble, runs right into a defender, and frankly, can run right through a defender. I mean, this is such an impactful free agent addition, is Josh Jacobs. Such an impactful signing for Green Bay. I mean, he has just been huge for these guys. And at 8-3... despite being in third place, which I just saw the stat this morning, this is the first time since the NFL merger a team has had a record as good as 8-3, and that's only good for third place in their division. Packers are good, and yesterday was a really good display of that. And again, I get it, right? The Niners are beat up. But that's what you should do in games like that. When you're playing a backup quarterback, when you're playing a beat-up team, you should manhandle them if you have championship expectations like the Packers do. And they did just that, a 38-10 win. Mad City Brewing, the ESPN Milwaukee YouTube chat. Heck yeah, happy Victory Monday. Chef Ed's trophy came close to nailing it. I said on Sunday Karma, they would have their most complete game of the season. Three turnovers, which they had, and a 31-17 final score. Even better than that, 38-10. Nice call, Chef Ed. Absolutely. I mean, it was their most complete game of the season. I'd have a hard time arguing that. Arizona's number two, but Jordan Love threw an interception in that game. He didn't do that yesterday, which I hope gives Packers fans, because it does give me faith, but I hope it gives all Packers fans a little bit of faith that Jordan Love is kind of reverting to his second half of last season self. I'm not saying he's going to be that efficient, and I'm not saying he's even going to be that good, but to watch him play a mistake-free game, it's a big step, right? The only time he threw an interception yesterday was on a free play, offsetting penalties. He had a couple of questionable throws, but all in all, I thought he was really good yesterday. And now back-to-back weeks, Jordan Love has looked like himself again. So those injuries clearly, I don't want to say derailed what Love is capable of, but they minimized what his typical impact could be. And to see him come back after the bye, play a really nice game in Chicago, only threw the ball 17 times last week, And then again this week, I think, what did I say, 23 times he threw the ball? 13 of 23. You'd like to see that completion percentage a little bit higher. But two touchdowns, no interceptions, only got sacked twice. Didn't make a ton of plays with his legs, but that's okay. When you've got Josh Jacobs running the ball 26 times and Emmanuel Wilson running at 9, you don't need him to use his legs. It opens things up in the passing game. And I just thought it was an exceptional job by Matt LaFleur in terms of game calling and everything that went into that game plan. They destroyed, dismantled, and dominated the San Francisco 49ers, which is not something you're used to saying since Matt LaFleur has been the head coach of the Green Bay Packers. So all in all, really, really encouraging performance by the Packers. But now you got to look ahead, right? I mean, this is a short week. You don't get a day to celebrate. You don't get an off day. Packers are back in action in 3 days. They play Thursday night at Lambeau against the Miami Dolphins. It is the nightcap in terms of Thanksgiving football. And it's an important one. I mean, if you can lose one more game, if you want to stay pace, right, with the Lions who won yesterday, with the Vikings who won yesterday, Vikings are 9-2, Lions are 10-1. If you want to keep pace in this division, you have to pretty much win out, I would guess now at this point with only 6 games remaining. But if you're going to drop one, the one with the least amount of consequence is Miami. And they're playing good football right now. We'll preview that game here a little bit because it is one that has my attention all of a sudden now that Tua Tagovailoa is back operating that offense. They've won 3 in a row. It's a better team than maybe you expected you were going to play a few weeks ago. So Miami is a big one. I mean, it really is, especially if you want to keep pace in this division. Detroit wins again, and they dominate the Colts. And this goes back to what I said about the Packers beating the Niners. If you are the team you think you are, if you think you are a legitimate Super Bowl contender or NFC Championship game contender, you need to beat bad teams when they're down. The Lions did that yesterday, and the Packers also did that yesterday, which certainly for Green Bay's sake means they're trending in the right direction. But I've pondered this for the last few weeks, and it comes back up now today. What do we know about the Packers through 11 games? Right? Like, I'm not necessarily asking what their identity is, but that's kind of what I'm asking. What do we know about the Green Bay Packers through 11 games? I think what we've certainly learned the last 2 weeks, and as we get into the colder months and as we get into the postseason, where a lot of NFC teams are playing in cold climates, right? Detroit, Philadelphia, Green Bay, obviously, if they somehow find a way to get a home game. You're going to be playing in these colder climates. You got to utilize that backfield. The Packers have done an exquisite job of that the last few weeks. Josh Jacobs has been terrific out of the backfield. But what did we learn anything new about the Packers yesterday? I don't know that we did, right? Like, we've been saying for a couple weeks, minimize the mistakes from Jordan Love, utilize the heck out of Josh Jacobs, and capitalize in the red zone. Finally, yesterday, they capitalized in the red zone. But the good news is, coming out of the bye the last 2 weeks, Packers have minimized penalties outside of, obviously, the early red zone drive where Elton Jenkins was called for a penalty. Outside of that, it seems like they've cleaned up the penalties. The drop passes are still popping up. That Christian Watson one hurt. You know, that was a tough one to see. But Love having an interceptionless game. I think I said that right. That's an important step in the right direction. So all in all, I don't know that we learned a ton, but we feel like this identity is explosive, young, and I don't know that they've shed that mistake-prone part of the identity we talked about a few weeks ago yet. Still some penalties you'd like to see get cleaned up. Still some drops you'd like to see get cleaned up. Jordan Love is throwing less interceptions. And hey, it was a nice bounce-back game for Quay Walker. He's not missing tackles. He's not losing tackles. You know, like last week when he got Roschon Johnson at the 3-yard line, he allowed him to get into the end zone still. Had him wrapped up. Carried him forward 9 feet. So kind of a nice rebound game for Quay Walker. Riley Yauch, who is in the Everlight Solar Studio. Did you learn anything new about the Packers in their 38-10 win over the 49ers yesterday, Riley?
I'm not sure if I learned anything new. I mostly wanted to chime in and say that Quay Walker did drop an interception, though. And that Jordan Love, while he didn't throw an interception, he could have easily had 2 interceptions in this game. There was one Christian Watson arguably made up for that terrible drop by playing the DB and smacking the ball out of his hands when he had it in both his mitts. So I don't know if I think I learned anything new, but the fact that the Packers were able to put up 38 points on a 49ers team that hasn't allowed more than 28 points this entire season is pretty darn good. I understand no Nick Bosa, no Chavarius Ward in the secondary, but still,
yep,
a very impressive performance from the green and gold. And did we need to learn anything new? I think we know this team is capable of making a deep run in the playoffs.
I guess my question would be to that, have we seen enough this year, right? Like, yes, 8-3 is a good record, and it should put you typically, in a typical year, that would put you in a position to win your division. I don't know if that's good enough to win the division this year, but it's going to put you in a position to punch a ticket to the playoffs, right? Give yourself a chance to have a chance. And as we've learned about Matt LaFleur, he is terrific in December and January, especially in the regular season. He always has his teams ready. I think he has we said it on the show last week. I don't remember off the top of my head. Something like 27-4 in December and January is Matt LaFleur's record. Don't quote me on that because I don't think it's exactly right, but it's close to something like that where he is dominant in December and January. So yeah, I mean, if you want to say, hey, we know that's a fact that he has his teams playing their best ball at the end of the year, then yeah, we know they're capable. But I don't know how many games we've seen this year, Riley, where we go, that is the championship team we expect. Arizona is one of those games. I will go ahead and fully agree for a team that is tied atop the NFC West. I don't think they're very good. I think they've kind of got a frisky offense who can score some points and do some cool things with Kyler Murray and James Conner and Maserati Marv and Trey McBride. But they're not a very good team. And the Packers completely dismantled them probably almost 2 months ago now against the Arizona Cardinals. So, eh. I don't know if we totally knew they were capable. Yesterday, they looked capable. Jordan Love looked like the guy we expected him to be. Josh Jacobs looked like the guy you go out and get in free agency. So, yes, I think we expect them to be capable. I don't know that we've seen it, though, right? So, yesterday was encouraging in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess my question is, what exactly do you want to see from this team going forward that can prove to you that they have the capability of winning the Super Bowl?
Well, I think it comes down to December 5th, frankly, right? Mm-hmm. When you play at Detroit, can you compete a little bit better than you did when they came in your house a couple of weeks ago? That, of course, is the one everybody should have circled, because, you know, the 24-14 final score in that game really wasn't what that game was. Detroit led 17-3 at halftime. They got the opening kickoff. It was 24-3 at one point. Like, that was a butt kicking. By Detroit to Green Bay. So, similarly to last year, you hope they respond from the butt-kicking in Lambeau Field and turn it into a butt-kicking of their own at Ford Field later in the season. You know, they did that last year on Thanksgiving. They went there and they whooped them. You hope that is the case here once again in 2024 when they go there, not this Thursday, but a week from Thursday. That's the game everybody should have circled because that game, to me at least, is the biggest. I mean, I don't know that I'm going out on a limb by saying this. It's the biggest one remaining under schedule. You got to win that one. You got to win at Minnesota in week 17. And again, you give yourself a chance to have a chance. But if you can go out to Detroit in a few weeks and say, hey, don't count us out. We still belong. We are still capable, to use your word, Riley. That is what I'm looking for. Now, Miami, again, I mean, that's a team that's rolling, who you play on Thursday, that if the Packers can do a... Let's just throw a score out there. A 28-14 win, that's encouraging against a potent offense. Because this defense, to me, they've had some nice showings, no doubt about it. But they're not, A, they're not super consistent, and B, I just don't really know what to make of them yet. Because and it's more player execution than it is scheme to me, right? The pass rush still isn't what you want it to be. To your point, Quay Walker still has his moments where you're going, what the hell are you doing, dude? But yesterday was a better day for him than it was a week ago against Chicago. So, yeah, there's still plenty of stuff I'd love to see. And I don't know that we'll ever get a perfect storm until we get to the postseason. But, yeah, I mean, there's still plenty of stuff I'd like to see. But clearly they are a good football team. Mm-hmm. They are one of the best teams in the NFC. They're right there with Detroit and Philadelphia. And, you know... they're going to get in, it looks like now. 8-3, they probably have to win two more games, and they're guaranteed at least the 7th seed. So, give yourself a chance to have a chance, but in the meantime, look, to use your word again, capable of being a championship team.
Yeah, exactly, because I would say all I need to see the rest of the regular season from the Packers, Jordan Love now has one game where he didn't throw a pick. If he can string together three more games, that'll be four. So say the Packers get the wild card game. If he can prove he can go four consecutive games without throwing an interception, and the pass rush maybe generate one sack in the next three games as well, I'm confident the Packers can win the Super Bowl. If they can't do that, I'll be a little more nervous come playoff time.
Yeah, look, I think the NFC representative is down to those three teams. I still don't fully buy the Vikings, though. I think they could probably win a playoff game. I don't fully buy them as a Super Bowl representative. I think it's between Detroit, Philadelphia, and Green Bay. And the thing we know about those other two teams is they've both beaten Green Bay. Now, albeit Philadelphia was week one and Detroit was later in the season, but they have both beaten Green Bay. So that is something to keep an eye on. But when it comes to Thursday, it's a cold game for a warm climate team, and I don't know how much stock I put into that, but it's worth noting. But they're okay defensively, right? Like, Jalen Ramsey's still a good player. Kendall Fuller was out this week. He's a solid corner. Jordan Poyer is one of their safeties. They've got a decent defensive backfield. Their front seven isn't great. Chop Robinson is, of course, an interesting name everybody had a crush on in the draft. Calais Campbell is old and really well-respected. Like, they've got some pieces defensively that could make an impact for or against Green Bay on Thursday. But all in all, it's a winnable game. It's a game you should win. And it's a game, really, your offense should probably pick apart the Dolphins' defense. I don't know for 38 points, but 27, 28 probably wins you the game. And obviously, Miami offensively is so stacked in terms of skill position players. Devon Achane, Packer killer Raheem Mostert in the backfield, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Jonnu Smith, who's been good for them at the tight end position the last couple of weeks. Miami's rolling, and they need to win a lot of games in order to get in order to reach their preseason expectations. They're 5-6. They're under 500. And every team the Packers have played that's 500 or worse, they've beaten. The teams above 500, they've lost to. So you can only play who's in front of you, but according to statistics, this is a game the Packers should win on Thursday. So we'll continue to preview that one coming up in a bit. Also want to hit Stock Up, Stock Down, which we do each and every Monday, or each and every day, I should say, following Packers games, a couple of Thursday night games coming up the next 2 weeks. So we will dive into Stock Up, Stock Down coming up next. But first, got to tell you about my friends, Door County Distillery, locally produced, handcrafted, award-winning spirits made locally in beautiful Door County. Holidays are coming quick, man. Elevate your holiday gathering. Door County Distillery, it's affordable, it's delicious, it's award-winning, it's local, it's the best. You got to do it. Elevate your Thanksgiving party coming up this week or this weekend. If you're like my family and you've got a couple spread over the weekend, I'll be bringing the bourbon around from Door County Distillery. Love the bourbon, need everybody to try it. Single malt whiskey or brandy, depending what you like in your old fashions. Door County Distillery does have cherry brandy made with local Door County cherries. Delicious in your cherry old fashions. Or you could do maybe a warm drink as the weather continues to get cooler. That apple brandy, good for hot toddies. You can do a warm drink with the bourbon I know we've featured in the past. Brandies, rums, gins, vodkas, whiskeys, all the in-betweens. Door County Distillery's got you covered. Go check out your local liquor store or your local retailer. Right? I know they're in Woodman's, other big grocers like that, Festival Foods across the state. Go check them out. Grab a few bottles. Everybody's going to love your Thanksgiving gathering. I mean, you're staying up late on Thursday. Packers play late. Door County Distillery can help you there. DoorCountyDistillery.com to find the retailer nearest you, as well as a huge list of unique cocktail recipes. We'll step aside for 60 seconds. When we come back, Stock Up, Stock Down after game number 11 for the Green Bay Packers. Spoiler alert, a lot of stock up, not a lot of stock down. We will dive into that coming up next. We will also continue to preview Thursday's matchup between the Packers and the Dolphins. And Riley, being the UW alum he is, I am going to give him an opportunity to get it off of his chest. Four losses in a row for the Badgers. Dylan Raiola, man, he didn't have to do a ton, and he smoked the Badgers on Saturday. So we will dive in to the Badgers' fourth consecutive loss and preview Friday's Axe game against Minnesota as well, coming up after the break. It's Mr. Relevant, Alex Stroh.
Fall is here, and once again, it has me asking the question, where in the world is Door County Distillery today? It brings me to the great Liberty Station off the Beltline in Madison. Let's go into Liberty Station.
Always a good time to enjoy a Door County Distillery Old Fashioned made with the delicious cherry brandy, which of course is infused with famous cherries from Door County. Whether you're making an Old Fashioned, just splashing in some lemon or lime juice, or just mixing it with a soda, nothing better than the cherry brandy from Door County Distillery. You can enjoy it everywhere, whether it's a tailgate, a holiday gathering, or you're sitting out at the patio right here at Liberty Station. Do it right with the Door County Distillery Cherry Brandy. Check out their website with a huge list of unique cocktail recipes at DoorCountyDistillery.com. That's DoorCountyDistillery.com. Yeah, DoorCountyDistillery.com is the website for the award-winning and local Door County Distillery. Okay, we do this every Monday, typically. I mean, it's going to be Fridays the next couple of weeks. Actually, not this week, because we will not have a show on Friday. I'm off due to the holiday. Might throw something in the podcast feed, though. And if you're not subscribed, if you're just joining us for the first time, this is Mr. Irrelevant. We do this every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, beginning at 12:30 Central on ESPN Milwaukee and ESPN Madison on YouTube and Facebook. And, of course, the podcast feed, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wisconsin On Demand, wherever you get your podcast, just search Mr. Irrelevant. It will be the first result. We do this three times a week. And in the podcast feed, I'm uploading exclusives all the time. I don't know if maybe you're a YouTube fan. Weekly Wildy with Jason Wildy. I upload that every Thursday. Will be Wednesday the next 2 weeks. So extra content in the podcast feed as well. So if you don't mind, go ahead, pull up Apple Podcasts, Spotify, click subscribe, rate us 5 stars. We appreciate the support as always. So anyway, we do this every day after Packer games. Stock up for some players, stock down for some players. And we just kind of go week by week and we evaluate, okay, in our head, who has evolved? Who didn't play their best game? Who are we worried about? And I think it's just a good pulse test to kind of go week by week and take a look at it. So we will start all with stock ups because I only have one real stock down from yesterday. I thought it was a really complete game by the Packers. Don't have a lot of complaints to walk away. Let's start with stock up with Josh Jacobs. He was awesome. Do I need to say much more? Right, it feels like the last couple of weeks we've been asking for, hey, don't forget you have him, right? Because Matt LaFleur had a history of getting away from Aaron Jones when he got hot, right? Put the ball in Love's hands or put the ball in Rodgers' hands. He's never overutilized the running back. And he did not overutilize the running back yesterday, but he utilized them correctly. 3 touchdowns for Josh Jacobs, fed him in the red zone, understood that that man is a bruiser and he will push a pile. And look, the Packers' offensive line is really solid. It's one of the better groups in the league, despite having some inexperience, right? Rashid Walker, Zach Tom, Sean Ryan. But they are a really complete group. They keep Love on his feet, and they create holes for Josh Jacobs. And Jacobs, one of the best backs in the NFL, proved his worth yesterday, 106 yards and 3 touchdowns. A big stock up to Josh Jacobs. Another stock up to Jordan Love. First game of the year without an interception. That is a stock up in my book. If Love can play turnover-free football, I have a hard time believing that the Packers would lose another game. I'm serious when I say that. Football sometimes is broken down pretty simply. It's typically if you win the turnover battle, you win the time of possession battle, you typically win the game. I know that sounds simple and stupid, but it's true. And if Jordan Love is not throwing bad interceptions like he has several times this year, you're going to be in a much better position to win football games. So stock up this week to Jordan Love, who I have been hard on this year. Now, as Riley pointed out a bit earlier, he did have some bad passes that could have been picked off. Luckily, they weren't. Christian Watson saved him on one. But all in all, stock up for Jordan Love. And my last stock up, kind of a weird one, but it's worth noting. Brandon McManus was 5 for 5 on extra points, was 1 for 1 on field goals. That wasn't a given at the beginning of the season. That wasn't a given last season. So I want to remind Packers fans, don't take the veteran, savvy, smooth, reliable kicker for granted. Because this was a major, major problem all of last year and into the beginning of this season. You couldn't rely on your kicker. And Brandon McManus has been super reliable for the Packers. I think he only has 1 missed field goal on the year now. So I just, subtle reminder for Packers fans, don't take the veteran kicker for granted. Brandon McManus, stock up, really nice game for him, 5 for 5 on extra points, and 1 for 1 on field goals, a total, of course, of 8 points for him in a 38-10 win. Not too shabby for the veteran kicker, Brandon McManus. Let's go to stock down. I only have one, and it's Christian Watson, who had kind of his breakout game last week against the Chicago Bears, came up in huge moments late in that game. And you know, this is kind of the give and take of the Packers receiving situation. You've got 3 really good guys and Romeo Doubs, Christian Watson, and Jaden Reed. And I guess a fourth if you want to count Tucker Kraft. And one guy with really high potential who's been unreliable in Dontayvion Wicks. So eventually, one of these guys is going to make a play that makes you kick yourself or, you know, slam something in frustration. Yesterday, that play was Christian Watson. At the end of the first half, Jordan Love, as perfect of a throw as maybe he's thrown all season, hits Christian Watson in stride. That would have been a walk-in touchdown at the end of the first half, which really would have sealed the deal for me. I never like to say games are over before they're over. Had Watson walked into the end zone and made that game, I think it would have been 24-7 at that point. That game was over. Or 24-3 it might have been. I would have been ready to say, all right, Packers win. Let's go home. But obviously he dropped it. Didn't lead to the touchdown. But Watson, still have a ton of faith in him. I'm not killing the kid, right? Like, he's a darn good receiver. He's a terrific vertical threat. You see how he opens things up for the Packers offense. That play is a perfect example of it. But ultimately, he dropped it. Yeah, it would have been 24-7 at the half had Watson reeled that in. And, you know, the Niners got the ball to start the second half. But when you're up 17 at halftime, it's a pretty darn cushy lead that the Packers then obviously continued to add on to. So all in all, Stockdown goes to Christian Watson, but this is not me losing faith in Christian Watson. This is not me giving up on Christian Watson. This is me just saying, hey, had a big opportunity there and you lost it. Luckily, it didn't come back to bite you. But as you get deeper into the season, when you see teams like Detroit and Minnesota later in the season, those are things that could kill you. Luckily, that wasn't the case yesterday, but can't have it. And it's only his first drop of the season. And as I mentioned earlier, this Green Bay team, I think they're third or fourth in the league in drops. So for Watson to have his first of the season come in week number 12, impressive. Impressive for him. So only stock down today goes to Christian Watson. But that's my only gripe. Just some cleanup on the ESPN Madison, ESPN Milwaukee YouTube chats. ESPN Madison, Mike says, I'd argue Green Bay beat themselves more than Detroit beat them. I think two things can be true. Detroit is a dominant, really good football team. And they took advantage of the Packers' shortcomings by all means. Obviously, Love had the bad pick six there at the end of the first half against Detroit. But all in all, meh. I don't know that they necessarily beat themselves as much as Detroit beat them. I think two things can be true, and they were there. Now, December 5th is going to be interesting to me because Green Bay realizes how important that game is, right? Both for your standing within the league, your standing within the NFC North, and how people view you going into the NFC playoffs. I think as it stands right now through 11 games, people are going, okay, Green Bay has the potential to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. We're just probably not betting on it yet. Right? Detroit looks that good. Philadelphia, and by the way, Saquon Barkley, unreal last night against the LA Rams for Philadelphia. He is the league MVP. I don't think he'll win it because it's such a quarterback award. But between him and Derrick Henry, we might actually see a running back win the MVP this year. Now, Lamar Jackson's got a good case. Josh Allen has a good case. And it's such a quarterback award, it will probably go to one of those two guys. But Saquon is making as good of a case as anybody in the league. And last night, he proved how important he is to what the Eagles do offensively. But anyway, between the Eagles and the Lions, those are your betting favorites in the NFC. And I think rightfully so. Those are two really good football teams. And again, they've both beaten the Packers so far this season. But if the Packers can go into Detroit next week and take care of business, all of a sudden people are looking sideways at Green Bay going, oh, okay, this is a Super Bowl team. This is a Super Bowl caliber team, and they can beat Super Bowl caliber teams. And you need to see it in January and ultimately February. But if the Packers win on December 5th, all of a sudden, the tone changes quite a bit around them. Because, look, frankly, Jordan Love's been underwhelming for most of the season. Matt LaFleur has made some questionable decisions in terms of play calling. And the defense has been inconsistent. But if you beat Miami on Thursday, you beat Detroit the following Thursday, and you go on this nice little winning streak, people all of a sudden are going to start taking the Packers very, very seriously. And we know they're a threat. And we know they have the potential to be a threat. But beating Detroit can completely changes the narrative on what you do. So that is what I'm looking ahead to. But you can only go one game at a time, and you got to pay attention to Miami first. That game on Thursday is a big one. I expect the Packers to win. I expect the Packers to take care of business. But it's a short week. You'll probably be without Romeo Doubs, who left that game with a concussion. You'll be without Jair Alexander. And TBD on Edrin Cooper. I would hope he's able to play as he didn't yesterday. But if you're without him, I still feel pretty confident the Packers will take care of business on Thursday. Now, Jordan Love, by the way, I don't want people to forget this either. I feel like I'm doing a lecture today. I'm reminding people how important a veteran kicker is. And now I'm reminding you, Jordan Love got snubbed of his turkey leg last year. If the Packers win on Thursday, I don't know if Packers fans should smuggle turkey legs in their orange hunting coats into Lambeau Field on Thursday. But somebody needs to get that man a damn turkey leg on Thursday if the Packers win. So don't forget that he got snubbed of his turkey leg in Detroit last year. If the Packers win, somebody needs to get Jordan Love a post-game turkey leg. And if it has to be me, I'll be the man of the people. I'll sneak a turkey leg in if I have to. But somebody's got to bring Jordan Love a turkey leg. Okay? Thank you. Off my pedestal, off my soapbox here on turkey legs. All right, I didn't want to do this, but we should do this. The Wisconsin Badgers are 5-6. The Wisconsin Badgers got smashed by Nebraska on Saturday. The Wisconsin Badgers have the third longest bowl eligibility streak in the country, third to Clemson and Oklahoma. Wisconsin should be viewed as a very good football school. And now they have lost 4 in a row, could be 5 in a row if they lose on Friday to Minnesota, and that would snap their bowl eligibility streak. We talked about it last Monday following the firing of Phil Longo, the offensive coordinator, and then Luke Fickell's, I don't even know what the right word is, inability to name a play caller to the media. It's just given me some really weird vibes. But something we've always known about the Badgers is, in Big Ten, they're better than Rutgers, and Purdue, then Northwestern, and Minnesota, and Nebraska. And unfortunately, that's just not the case anymore. What you saw on Saturday is what the Badgers are. And Braden Locke, debatably, played one of his better games this season, and they still got freaking smoked. The Badgers looked really bad on Saturday. And, you know, I was so upset. I was driving to Green Bay on Saturday night. I called into ESPN Wisconsin College Game Day. I don't do that. I don't call into our shows very often. But I had to get it off my chest. And it's just, it's hard to, see, even a couple days removed, feel any emotion but sad about the state of the Wisconsin Badgers as it stands right now. Like, this is a team that typically you expect to beat the Nebraskas and beat the Minnesotas. And that's not happening anymore. I don't think the Badgers are going to win on Friday. What reason have they given me in 2024, especially the last month, to make me believe they're going to beat Minnesota, who gave Penn State a very hard test on Saturday? Penn State barely skated by Minnesota up until the end. They look better than the Badgers. And I'm not an alum of Wisconsin, so I don't have the this is my alma mater passion that Riley Yauch does, and Riley Yauch is about to give us. But I'm not starting the hashtag fire Fickell, but something's got to give, man. This is embarrassing what the Badgers are going through right now. So I will give the alumnus that is Riley Yauch the floor.
Yeah, definitely do not start the fire Fickell train. I'm going to get on my soapbox and defend Luke Fickell here in a second because ultimately the players play. I'll get to that in a moment. But yeah, I'm not confident the Badgers are going to beat Minnesota. This could be the first year in over a decade the Badgers have an empty trophy case. No Memorial Trophy, no Heartland, and no Axe if they don't beat Minnesota. Minnesota probably should be 8-4 coming into this game. They got completely screwed by the referees against Michigan, should have recovered an onside kick with a chance to win, and their kicker shanked a field goal against North Carolina in week one. They should have won that game. So this Minnesota team is objectively better than this Wisconsin team. So I'm very nervous as well for this Friday's game against the Gophers. But let me defend Luke Fickell here for a second. I tweeted out on Saturday, I was pissed, just like every Badger fan, about how the game turned out. It was horrible. The Badgers have now been embarrassed by two of their rivals and have lost close ones against good teams, but ultimately they can't get that big win. They can't get over the hump. But everyone's blaming Fickell. Everyone blamed Longo, and I'm glad he was fired. Luke Fickell and Phil Longo clearly did not see eye to eye on the identity of this team and how they wanted things to go. So I'm happy Fickell had the stones to get rid of Longo. But now everyone's turning to Fickell as the scapegoat. Oh, this is a failed experiment. Chris McIntosh is in over his head. It's terrible. But ultimately, I think that the players play and that ultimately execution is why this team is sitting at 5-6 and in danger of not going to a bowl. You can put that on the coaches overall, maybe, but let me just get into this for a second. I think there have been game-changing plays that have nothing to do with coaching that have happened in every single loss, starting with Alabama. They missed that field goal at the end of the half. That turned into a Bama touchdown, turned what would have been a 10-6 game into a 21-3 game. There's Bama. We never came back. USC. We are completely dominated, in control. Then you have a muff punt. Give USC a short field. They score. It becomes a game again. Then the defense can't get off the field on third downs. I don't know what Mike Tressel can do about that if you can't stop a 3rd-and-17 from Miller Moss and the USC offense. Penn State, obviously, Braden Locke pick six. That one's obvious. That one turned that game. The Badgers were also somewhat in control of that one, too. Iowa. This one, obviously, they got beat down pretty bad, but Wisconsin was still in a decent spot. They were trailing 7-3. They forced a 3-and-out against the Iowa offense with a chance to go take the lead or at least cut into the lead, and then Locke throws another interception. They go down the field, score 14-3. Badgers never came back. Oregon, there was the penalty, illegal man downfield on the Braden Locke touchdown pass that would have put the Badgers up 17-6 over Oregon. That comes off the board. That sucked. They couldn't get a fourth down stop on fourth down and long against Dylan Gabriel and that offense. That would have flipped the field. Probably win that game if you get the stop. And then there was also the missed holding call on that Braden Locke touchdown pass that didn't happen, but still, whatever. Or a missed holding call, pardon me, on that Dylan Gabriel fourth down conversion. Should have bumped the Ducks back 10 more yards. But anyways, another winnable game. And then Nebraska, Vaikos makes those field goals at the start of the game, especially after that interception. You turn a 7-7 game into 10-7 game. You just turn the ball over, kick the field goal. You're on top. Nebraska, maybe they still go down and score, but then you're only trailing by 4. And at half, you don't fumble the football right before halftime and give them a free 3 points. That game should have been 21-16 at the worst. Going into halftime, completely different game. Locke made some very just gorgeous deep ball throws yesterday or on Saturday that we really haven't seen a ton this year. So ultimately, my point is every single loss, it's execution. The players play. Sure, the coaches need to get them ready for these games. And since it's happening so consistently, coaches should probably look in the mirror and see what the issue is as well. But I think Fickell's the guy. Carter Smith, 4-star QB coming. Defensive lineman, I forgot who the other flip from Michigan was. I believe in Fickell, and I believe in the future.
I'm happy to hear that, Riley, and I'm glad you do. Number one, there's enough blame to go around.
Yep.
Blame falls on Fickell. Blame falls on the players. It goes from top to the bottom, right? There is a fundamental issue throughout the program right now. I'm fine with saying, hey, man, 4-star quarterback coming. We're good to go. But I need to see it, right? This is year 2 of Fickell.
That is totally
fair. Quarterback has failed here.
That is totally fair.
And there was off-season excitement for Mabry Matoyer, and now they're saying he's not ready. Another 4-star quarterback.
Yes. So I will say I have talked to an unnamed defensive player on the Wisconsin Badgers who has said that Matoyer has quote-unquote sucked at practice, hence why he has not played. I will not name. He didn't go into specifics, and I will not name the player, but Matoyer apparently has not looked great at practice, hence why Braden Locke has been the starter all season.
Which makes sense. But again, could that be the case with, and I hope not, with Carter Smith, who they just flipped over the weekend? Maybe, maybe not. But you're running out of runway if you're Luke Fickell. Like, I am a believer you get 4 years.
Yep.
And maybe if next year will be year 3. But if next year looks like this, right? 5-7, 6-6 again, is it better to just start over? It might be. Because this isn't working. So I'm not saying fire Fickell. I believe he's a good college football coach. I believe he's a good leader of a program. And I believe he can turn this thing around. But you're running out of time. Right? We said, just give it time. Just give it time. Just give it time. We're running out of time. So next year is probably the last year where I give the patience of a 7-5 season before you need to go, okay, when are we going to be competing for the college football playoff? Or when are we competing for a legitimate bowl? Riley, I don't know if you've looked at bowl projections recently, but I pulled up Sports Illustrated today. Just out of curiosity, right? If the Badgers win on Friday, they're 6-6, they clinch another bowl game. Where does Sports Illustrated have them playing?
Yeah, what they destination location?
Oh, Detroit, Michigan, Riley. They'd be playing Toledo in the Detroit Bowl.
Oh, let's go. Go right? Rockets.
Like, yeah, nothing like spending Christmas in Detroit, Michigan. And, you know, like, the cool part about bowl games, especially for college kids, is like, okay, maybe you get to go to Hawaii or Vegas or Arizona or Orlando, right? Go to a warm destination over the holidays in your winter break, get a little tan going, play in a cool bowl game. No, the Badgers get to go play frickin' Toledo in the Detroit Bowl. That's what Sports Illustrated's projecting if they win on Friday. So that's how far this program's fallen. The frickin' Detroit Bowl. They were in the Orange Bowl 5 years ago. The Detroit Bowl? I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah.
The Detroit Bowl against Toledo. Toledo!
Yeah, this is...
That's where this program has fallen to.
That's the game that you'll see the Rutgers and the Purdues and the Minnesotas and the Illinois. That's where they used to play. And yeah, like you said, that's where we're at now. I still believe in this coaching staff. I believe Fickell is going to nail the offensive coordinator hire in the future. However,
I hope you're right.
Same. So do I. But yeah, you have to beat Minnesota this Friday. You have to. Even though we are both not confident it's going to happen, you have to.
Yeah. No, right. You have to. You have to. What are some other options? Maybe the Pinstripe Bowl again, which the Badgers were in a few times.
I've even seen if there aren't enough bowl-eligible teams and the Badgers still win, they go to a spot that would typically be reserved for like a MAC school or a CUSA school, like the Boca Raton Bowl. Our Good Karma Brands Bowl down in Boca Raton.
Oh, yeah, that'd be fun. Look, I mean, that's just... It's bad, but we will see.
Yes.
So anyway, good rant there by Riley Yauch, the esteemed alumnus of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm a Badgers fan, but I turned it off on Saturday. I don't know how you watch that. I got in my car, actually, is what I did. I was like, okay, I'm going to wait till the end of the game to drive to Green Bay. Nope. End of the third quarter. Jumped to my car. Listened to the rest of it on the radio with our buddy Tausche and flipped on ESPN Wisconsin College Game Day with Alex Gravatt and Adam Mertz, and then Brad Nortman and I happened to call in at the same moment, and me and Brad just got it off our chest. It's like free therapy when you call into shows like that. So if you're ever feeling upset about the Packers or the Badgers, ESPN Wisconsin is your place to be. Hey, but I will say, my weekend got turned around on Underdog, underdogfantasy.com. Won $138 yesterday on Underdog. Three pick entry, threw $25 down on it, nailed all three in the Packers in the Packers game yesterday. Here's what I picked. I had McCaffrey lower than 113 total yards, George Kittle higher than 37.5 receiving yards, and Josh Jacobs higher than a half a touchdown. Well, he had three of them, so that part helped. 25 won me $138. So I'm riding high into Monday Night Football tonight on Underdog and UnderdogFantasy.com. Use promo code GoodKarma at signup. GoodKarma. GoodKarma at signup. Get up to a 50% deposit match and a free pick at signup. Elevate your game watching experience. It's made it so much fun to watch games. Maybe I typically wouldn't. College basketball, I've been doing a lot. And by the way, the Maui starts tonight. Stacked field in the Maui. Stacked field in the Maui Invitational, which starts tonight. So I'll be betting along on there on Underdog. But also some Monday Night Football entries tonight for me on Underdog. So extra $138 in my pocket. I'm not complaining about that. Why don't you do the same thing? Underdog app is free to download. And I mean, even if you're hesitant, right? Maybe, you know, watching sports that way, you're not super into it yet. Throw $20 in the Underdog app. You get an extra 10 to play with, and you can make as low as a $1 entry. Right, you can turn a buck into a grand on Underdog by going up to 8 players in your pick 'em entry. All you do is select higher or lower on player projections on their stats, and you can win up to 1,000 times your money. For me, I took a big swing. I Joshy told us on Friday's show what he had cooking up for an 8 entry touchdown entry on Underdog. I went 4 of 8, so lost $5 there, but. As I mentioned, I won $138 on a three-play entry. So just looking at tonight, Monday Night Football, here's what I'm looking at. Derrick Henry, higher, half a touchdown. Justin Herbert, I think I'm going to go higher on 262.5 passing yards. And Zay Flowers, higher, 23.5 longest reception. I think he's going to have a big catch tonight. That wins you 4.2 your money, 4.2 times your money. So 10 bucks wins you 42 on the Underdog app. Derrick Henry higher than half of a touchdown. Justin Herbert higher than 262.5 passing yards. And Zay Flowers higher than 23.5 on his longest reception. Might tweak that. I will tweet out what I end up picking on Twitter, at Alex_Stroh. Gut feeling, those are the three I like right now. But I'll tweet out my entry ahead of Monday Night Football tonight. And I might mix in some Maui Invitation. I'll be watching some college basketball tonight. My girlfriend's getting her hair done. So it's me and the sports tonight. It's going to be great. A little Door County Distillery, a little college basketball, a little NFL football. Just laying on the couch. It's going to be a great Monday night. Can't wait. All right, time now for what we learned. You learn something new every day. I learned something new today. I don't know if Riley learned something new today. He didn't tell me if he had a what we learned or not. Riley, did you learn something new?
I did.
Or just same old, same old? Okay, tell me about it.
All righty. So I guess let's go back to Saturday and some college football. I learned that the SEC conference this year, at least in football, is horribly overrated. They're so mediocre this year.
Sure
you have
is.
Alabama, Ole Miss, and Texas A&M all got their third loss of the season this Saturday, all against unranked teams. I don't want to hear none of this BS about it. SEC three-loss team should get in the playoff, because if you look at the Vegas spread, oh, an Alabama three-loss Alabama would still be favored over a one-loss Indiana. I don't care. That's why the games are played. Alabama was favored over Oklahoma. 4-win Oklahoma or whatever they were, and they got beat by 21 points. The SEC, horribly overrated. They're mediocre this year. They're not cannibalizing themselves. They're just not all that great. So that's what I learned this weekend, and I'm glad we can finally get rid of that narrative. I'm done. Indiana is in the playoff.
I really like that, Riley. Yeah, Indiana's going to make it, despite losing to Ohio State on Saturday. But it's a cool story. I like that. Kurt Cignetti, obviously, the new head coach at Indiana, has those boys playing really, really good football. And although they did fall short on Saturday, Ohio State's a really good team, and their only loss is to Oregon, and they'll probably see them again in the Big Ten championship game. So that's as things stand right now, and that would be a fun rematch. I think that Big Ten championship game is also on my birthday. Going to be a good sports day. You've got Badgers Marquette, both top 15 teams now. AP poll came out while we've been on the air here, Riley.
Yeah, they're 15th,
Badgers,
right?
Badgers number 15. Yeah, 15th, and Marquette number 10. Now, Marquette, prior to that Badgers game, that Wednesday, they go to Iowa State, who is the number 5 team in the country. So Marquette's got a big week of hoops coming up. Not this week, but next week. Next Wednesday, they play at Iowa State, and then Saturday, they host Wisconsin. So, truthfully, if Marquette goes 2-0, which I don't think will happen, in those two games, they would probably become
number four, number three.
Yeah, definitely number five, top five, but probably number four, number three in the country if they win both those games. So, fun stuff. And how about the Badgers, by the way? Greenbrier tip-off champs.
Big at least the basketball the team basketball is good. Team. They're carrying right now.
And look, Riley, like, it's not what anybody expected either. Like, there wasn't a lot of high hopes for this Badger team. They lost 8 people in the transfer portal this offseason. Greg Gard and his staff go out there. They recruit the heck out of some people. John Tonje came out of nowhere. He never had a previous spot where he averaged over 10 points a game. He is far and away the Badgers' leading scorer through 7 games. He's been really, really impressive and wins the MVP in the Greenbrier tip-off as the Badgers topped Pittsburgh last night in the championship game. So, good stuff for the basketball team. They are indeed caring. That is not what I learned, though. What I learned, this is a wacky one, so bear with me. So, there is a new media outlet, relatively new in the last few years, called the 33rd Team. It's Mike Tannenbaum's like analytical website, but also, personalities. The St. Brown podcast, which we've played clips from on here before with Equanimeous and Amon-Ra St. Brown, is on the 33rd Team.
What exactly do they do?
Does the 33rd team do? They're like an NFL football media / analytics site / company. That's kind of what they do, I guess would be my best explanation of it. Mike Tannenbaum, who also works for ESPN, owns that as well. Former Jets general manager. So the New York Jets have hired the 33rd team to lead their search for their next general manager, which will include the aforementioned Mike Tannenbaum, who was the Jets general manager back in the day. Now, this weekend, the 33rd team released an article, which has now been deleted, called 5 Potential Candidates for the New York Jets Vacant GM Role. And then they were literally hired to lead the search and deleted the article. It's just a hilarious story. It's the now the 33rd team earlier today announcing that they will offer services to universities and professional teams to lead candidate searches, but they also released an opinionated article just days ago with five candidates, none of which were very exciting. So that's what I learned today. The world is weird, man. The world is weird.
Interesting.
You can't have your cake and eat it too, but I guess the 33rd team can have their cake and eat it too, but they deleted some of their cake as well. So there you have it. That's what I learned. Very wacky situation in the world of the National Football League. That will do it for us today. Big Packers win yesterday. Wednesday, we do a full-blown preview because we will have Weekly Wildy that comes out Wednesday. We will also, of course, do Mr. Irrelevant on Wednesday. Ton of preview coming to the podcast feed and YouTube and wherever you watch or listen to the program. Appreciate you listening. Appreciate you hanging out. Appreciate you breaking it down with me. I feel really, really good about this Packers win. 38-10. Woo! Over the San Francisco 49ers. We will continue to preview Packers-Dolphins coming up Thanksgiving night. Maybe we'll do like a Thanksgiving special. Should I dress up as a turkey or something?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe I will.
Yep.
Okay, thank you, Riley. Yep. Maybe I will. Maybe I will for Wednesday's show. All right, we'll talk to you Thursday beginning at 12:30. Tiny Hands returns. Joshy returns Wednesday as we continue to preview Packers-Dolphins. Big thanks to Riley Yauch for running the show today. This has been Mr. Relevant, presented by Door County Distillery. I'm Alex Stroh. Peace.